When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
ESNY. All right, it is the Bleacher Creatures, episode number 152, brought to you as always by Crossing Broad, XL Media, Elite Sports NY, the voice, the pulse of New York City sports, Warwick Gaming, and as always, Rivercrest NYC. Man, we got a full house today. This is pretty much the Bleacher Creatures Christmas special. We got Mets fan Matt Musico. We got Philadelphia's own Kevin Kincaid here in the house. Welcome, guys.
Thanks for having me, man.
Yeah.
What's up, brother? I'm on a Yankees podcast. How did this happen?
You know what? It's the off season. The Yankees don't really have much else to do until they trade for a left fielder. So Alec and I decided we're going to talk some national stuff, because especially in this part of the country, because Matt's in Connecticut, Alec and Kevin, you guys are both in Philly. I'm here in New York. We've got a lot of activity in our respective divisions. Now, you know, we're going to come out blazing right now. Matt, we've got to have a little kangaroo court here, because you're here representing the Mets. We are going to bring you up on charges of falsely impersonating a Steinbrenner, falsely capturing the Yankee swagger, all of a sudden getting an owner out of nowhere thinking that you are more than simply just the Mets. All right, you know what? How are you feeling here as a Mets fan with all of a sudden money being spent?
Well, I'm just sensing a twinge of jealousy, so I'm okay with all those charges.
Wow! All right.
No, I mean it's something that if you told me this was going to be happening 5 years ago, I would have laughed in your face. Yeah. You know, Mets fans have been waiting for something like this, maybe not to this level, but just any kind of legitimate investment into the roster. You could tell that an owner actually cares and wants to win. You know, they've been waiting for that for a long time, and the Wilpons have always been, you know, kind of a pain, and it became more of a pain after the Bernie Madoff scandal and things like that. So to have this complete 180, it feels like the Wilpons owned the Mets like 20 years ago, not 2 years ago. So it's been really eye-opening. And every time something happens, I have to like pinch myself. I'm like, this is actually happening. They actually signed Justin Verlander. They, you know, they've spent $500 million so far this free agency, and they're not done yet. Like, all this kind of stuff is just pretty ridiculous.
Kevin, you'll get a kick out of this story as some token New York elitism. My parents for years frequented a restaurant that Fred Wilpon would often go to with his family, his wife, girlfriend, whatever.
Was it McDonald's?
Now, no, this was a yeah, probably. Yeah, as if my parents would ever be caught dead in a McDonald's. That's another story entirely. But get this, there was this little table off to the side, kind of like a little booth on a riser, little sort of like small round table that you could fit four, maybe five people at. My parents go down there one night. It's them, another couple, just sitting at that table, sitting nice and quietly. Wilpon walks in, notices them at the table, whispers something to the manager. He comes over and says, "Mr. Wilpon says you're sitting at his table. We'd like to buy you a round of drinks to move." My stepfather said, "No, we were here first." Went back and relayed it to Wilpon, turned around, walked out of the restaurant.
Well, there you go. They're normal people just like us, you know, and we can relate to, yeah, all the money and privilege and all that stuff. You know, what's funny is that the Mets, the Phillies and the Yankees, I think, have the top three payrolls next year, don't they?
Yeah, as of now, they do, because the Dodgers really aren't spending. And like the Red Sox, there was an article from Ken Rosenthal in The Athletic today about how their whole plan is essentially blowing up in their face, because they brought in that guy Chaim Bloom to be the GM, essentially, to rebuild the minor league system, but also keep the team competitive. And he came from the Rays, so he's like not going to offer these decades long contracts, because ownership, it turns out, in Boston dictates the length of the terms. The GM only weighs in accordingly. Yeah. So now he's trying to rebuild this minor league system, and field a competitive team and, you know, failing miserably at it because like 37-year-old Justin Turner is going to play first base. But all this to say, yes, the Yankees, Mets, and the Phillies, top three payrolls in baseball. And the Phillies got there because you got Bryce Harper on the books, Zach Wheeler's contract, and then he gave $300 million to Alex's favorite, Trey Turner.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's funny, man. I don't know how much you guys are aware of this, you know, people in other markets when the Bryce Harper signing was going on. But, you know, at that point, the Phillies had been absolute dreck for almost 10 years at that point. And it was seen as like a referendum on the franchise and ownership, whether they were serious or not, if they had to go out and get one of Bryce Harper or Manny Machado. And I remember it was like the summer or it was the winter, I guess.
Yeah.
Of Harper, Machado. I think I wrote like 100 stories about like Harper and Machado. It was a stupid, dumbass rumor that John Heyman or John Morosi or who are Roosevelt, anybody would tweet like a tidbit about it. We'd throw it up on the site and people would go crazy for it because they were just, they knew it's like, you got to, like, we joke about all these people spending all this money, but it's a league without a salary cap, man. And it's not our money. So it's like, if you want to be serious and you want to be a competitor, win. So they go out and they spend all this money for Bryce Harper. You know, and they go out and sign Zach Wheeler and, look, you know, they go out and get Castellanos, they go get Schwarber. Look where they end up. They end up in the World Series. So if anything, I mean, it proved that that's the right thing to do. You know, I mean, they went over the threshold, spent all this money and John Middleton was rewarded for it. And, you know, comes back and signs Trey Turner, you know, I mean, so I like, if anything, it was all these people were calling for it. Hey, you got to spend. Are you going to be serious? And hey, they're spending, and that's it's like a, you know what I'm saying, man? It's like a cascade effect. It's like one thing precedes the other. Like Harper was him dipping his toe in the water. It's like, oh, you know, we pay for good players, we're gonna be good. Holy shit, who knew? You know, and so it's like, you know, one thing on top of another. Now you're looking at a team that was up 2-1 in the World Series and somehow got a no hit by Christian Javier and a couple other dudes that I can't remember, you know. So
Christian Javier is so infuriating because he's such a, his thing is that he spins the fastball to the point where haters can't see it. Yeah. Like he's not even throwing that quickly. He's topping out maybe 94 on a good day, and he's got these long fingers, so the hitters just can't see the ball. He no hit the Yankees this year too.
Yeah. By the way, can we just talk about that real quick? How do you go from hitting 5 home runs in game 3 of the World Series or whatever to not registering a single hit in the next game? It was the most Phillies thing of all time because that lineup was just put together to swing for the fences, you know what I mean? Yeah. So it just shows the feast or famine of just what that lineup was set up to do.
Well, it's also like we've talked on the podcast before, say each one of the Astros about them being cheaters, unlikable, this, that, or the other. The years since 2017 have shown that, above all else, the Houston Astros, they know how to develop young pitchers. Yeah. They've mastered the idea of spin rate. They revived Justin Verlander's career to the point where now Matt's Mets are paying him $40 million a year. I mean, like, Matt, like five years ago, someone tells you, hey, the Mets are going to sign Justin Verlander at 39 years old. He'll have just had a career season, like one of the most historically great seasons in baseball history, and you're going to give him over $40 million a year.
I would be like, who are you talking about again? I mean, the Mets are employing two of them and paying two of them $40 million each to pitch. So it's like, it's insanity.
I mean, let's ask, here's a question for the room right here. Looking at Verlander and Max Scherzer, you look at them and just what they do on the mound. Max Scherzer, he's kind of like his generation's Nolan Ryan, but he doesn't walk anybody. He's got better control and he throws more than just two pitches. Justin Verlander is just a monster. It's kind of, now you understand why guys our dad's age marveled at the likes of Steve Carlton, of Tom Seaver, like that whole generation of pitchers. And pitching only gets better generation by generation, they're discovering.
Yeah, it's interesting, man, because like, you know, even when the Phillies were like really, really good 10 years ago, it's like you like Halliday had that one pitch that you knew, right?
Yeah.
And Cliff Lee had that one pitch that you knew. You know, and this guy that the Mets just signed, Senga, throws this, like, what are they calling it? Like a ghost fork ball?
Ghost fork, yeah.
They show a side-by-side of him throwing his fastball and him throwing this fork thing. And they hover at the same exact trajectory. Then one just drops and the other stays straight, you know. But it's like, it was just funny watching the World Series because, I don't know, it was kind of a referendum on like this idea of like, hey, we're just going to hit for power and we're going to swing for the fences every time versus, you know, trying to play small ball and trying to just hit for average and put the ball in play. You know, it's like maybe Trey Turner helps with that a little bit with the Phillies. But I mean, it was just, I think it was like that. It was just like baseball with a lot of these lineups and that approach. It's like high highs, you know, when they're on, but then incredibly low lows, you know, because when these power lineups aren't hitting, then what, you know, there was no plan B for them. You know, I think that was the frustrating thing about the World Series. It was like, they were either going to be on or they weren't. That's my biggest takeaway from the series.
Kevin, you just hit the nail on the head. I pointed out even during the World Series, like, yeah, the Astros won the World Series. This was still easily their weakest team from a hitting standpoint since 2017. Okay, you had the guys up top. You had Brantley didn't even play. What am I saying? You had Jeremy Pena. You had Jose Altuve, the usual big guns, like Kyle Tucker, who's just phenomenal on its own. But outside the top four, after that, it's a crapshoot.
And
now that Justin Verlander's gone, that team loses a lot of its teeth. Now, Matt, like, this, let's pivot right here. Jacob DeGrom goes to the Rangers, who are probably going to be a pretty big competition for the Astros next year. DeGrom, 5 years. How do Mets fans really feel about him being gone?
Well, I think there's a faction of them that still get a little weepy whenever they hear Simple Man when they're at the bar.
Yeah.
That's the song that he came out to. But, yeah. I mean, I think, you know, lots of Mets fans, after seeing the terms of the contract, everyone kind of gets it. You know, like, for the past couple of years, DeGrom kept on saying, well, it'd be really cool to be a lifetime Met. Even right after he said he was going to opt out, in the next breath, he said, it would still be cool to be a lifetime Met or to stay with one team for my whole career. Right. So I think that's where, like, the rug kind of got pulled out from a lot of the fans' perspective, because everyone's kind of like thinking, okay, like, he's still going to get paid. I mean, I think the offer was somewhere between like $110-$120 million for 3 years.
3 years, 120 is what they offered him.
Yeah, so it's like, it's not like it was an outrageous underpay. It's not like a Xander Bogaerts and Boston Red Sox situation, you know.
Jesus Christ,
they didn't,
what a disaster. Like,
the Rangers were just the only team willing to go to that length because they're desperate enough to get him to lead the starting staff. So it's like, at the end of the day, who's going to really fault him for taking $185 million and maybe $222 million if he gets that option too?
That's the thing, though. I don't necessarily think it was desperation by the Rangers, because if you look at the Rangers last year, they're a better team than people realize. They were, I think, 8th and 12th, respectively, in runs scored and home runs. So, you know, they can hit. They've got the hitting core. They got Marcus Semien. They got Corey Seager. They got Adolis Garcia. They got Jonah Heim, who's an underrated hitting catcher. And then, therefore, they're kind of in a position where they can afford to take risks on the pitching staff and have DeGrom be the leader of the staff, and then just develop all these other young arms and try to outslug the competition along the rest of the way. So in theory, DeGrom really only needs to make about 20-ish starts a year for the Rangers for that contract to be worth it, so long as the bats get it together and reverse last year and draw more walks, strike out less. Plus, Bruce Bochy is going to do wonders for that team.
Yeah, it could be like a Buck Showalter effect on the Mets. I think this probably
100%.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, teams that are willing to pay. It's funny because it's like, you know, teams that are in contention, what are you willing to pay? The answer is whatever it takes. I mean, the Phillies paid Taiwan Walker four years, $72 million. You know,
yeah, that's more
number four. You know,
but, yeah, that's good considering he wants to be a number four. But it's astonishing how overpriced the second tier pitching market was this year.
It is, yeah. I mean, and that was just a product of it. But I think that's just another example of Middleton understanding that, like, hey, man, if you want to play, if you want to take the next logical step and get back to the World Series and win the World Series, this is the reality of the situation, you know? Like, yeah, you're all in now, man. I mean, you got both feet in this, you know? You can't cheap your way out of it now. You can't bullshit your way out of it now. And I give the Phillies credit for recognizing that, because you've come too far to... What's the alternative? You're just going to be like, oh, we're going to roll out the same, you know, roll out Nola, Wheeler, Suarez, and hope that this prospect Painter comes up and he's really good. Like, no, I mean, like go for it, you know? So I give him credit for that.
I mean, like, Alec, you were really excited when Trey Turner came to Philly. And I just want to touch on this as well, because Turner's a Florida man, but his wife's from Flemington, New Jersey. And the Phillies, I mean, going back to Cliff Lee, when he kind of engages them as the mystery team in free agency, players want to come to Philly. They want to live in the area. I mean, it's kind of like they're part of the neighborhood almost, or just like being in the area, almost like the Buffalo Bills. How like the Bills, like the players, they actually like living there.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's for guys like Harper, for guys like Turner, you know, they have that luxury where they can live across the river in Jersey and then just make that short commute over. But it is slept on a little bit just how passionate this fan base is and how easy it is for, you know, Philadelphia as a city in general to get behind a player, a team during whatever run. So we always talk about, you know, Boston, New York, all the really big market teams. And as it was kind of mentioned earlier, the last 10 years, the Phillies were kind of non-factors in the league. And then now all of a sudden they're up on the up and coming again. And yeah, why wouldn't a team or player want to, you know, circle that the city and just be like, I want to go play there, especially when you got a guy like Bryce Harper, like leading that clubhouse and actually bringing some swagger and fun back to Philadelphia baseball. I mean, I say that as a Yankee fan, but living here has been an absolute blast. And I got to be honest, I probably had more fun at Phillies games than I do at Yankee games.
Let me make 2 points piggybacking off of that. First of all, Bryce Harper is probably the best GM in baseball right now.
Yeah, seriously.
And I'm not, that's not even a joke. Like, I really truly believe that, you know. But I mean, you landed that one person who wanted to be here and spoke highly of the atmosphere and the fans. And obviously, he was in the division, so he saw it firsthand. Even when the Phils were shitty, you know, the fans were passionate and they were, you know, into it, you know. And but think of the players who have come through since then that he's had a hand in. He openly campaigned for JT Realmuto, openly campaigned for Trey Turner. You know, his addition paved the way for the signings of guys like Zach Wheeler and Kyle Schwarber and Nick Castellanos, even if he didn't go on Instagram and say, hey, we should sign this guy. You know what I mean? Right. But he was the catalyst really for that, you know, is the word I'm looking for, I guess. And, you know, it's interesting because Crossing Broad back in the day when it was founded in 2009 really was probably a Phillies blog. You could call it a Phillies blog because most of what Kyle Scott wrote back then was a lot of Cliff Lee, Roy Halladay, you know, that was like the height of Jimmy Rollins and Chase Utley and all that. They were coming off the World Series, right? So when we got
remind us who won that World Series.
Yeah, well, we don't have, that's neither here nor there.
But, I think it's talking about 2008 anyway, so.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So when we got to, the World Series this year, look, I mean, we didn't do a ton of Philly stuff, as much Philly stuff as we were doing on the site, frankly, because they just weren't very good. You know, they were going through Pete McCannon and Ryan Sandberg and Gabe Kapler and all this stuff. And, you know, then they turned that corner hard with Rob Thompson. And the month that they were in the World Series was the best traffic month that Crossing Broad has ever had, ever in the site's 13-year history, bigger than the Super Bowl and the Super Bowl parade and all that stuff. Yeah, it was just proof to me, I think, that the Phillies fan base is massive and they've always been there and it will always be a baseball town. I just think that they were like dormant, man, because there wasn't anything for them to cheer for. You know what I mean? But me and Kyle Pagan were probably worked like 30 days straight during the World Series. And, you know, Anthony Sanfilippo and Bob Wankel would be down at the games. They had credentials for the games and I would, you know, I'd get like one or two posts up during the game. And then I just sit there and I'd rip off like bang, bang, bang. There's like three viral things that would happen after every game. Like, Verlander flipping somebody the bird or whatever, you know, and then Kate Upton's doing the double birds or whatever. There's 10,000 clicks right there. I mean, it was like, it was so ridiculous how dialed in everybody was to it that when the World Series was over, everybody, it's like everybody came off this like cocaine binge or something like that. Needed like a week to like decompress. Like the Flyers didn't even exist. The Sixers didn't even exist. The Eagles were still undefeated at that point, but we've never done more traffic than when the Phillies were in the World Series.
It also needs to be remembered, like, we're not that, you know, we're how many years removed from, like, the failed Scott Kingery project and, like, there's really dark times of, you know, where the team looked like it was dead in the water. That not only was the future or the present just bleak, but the future was equal.
We don't like to talk about the Matt Klentak years.
No, and they were like, it's funny, man, because they were like, you think of some of those names that played for the Phillies from like 2014 to 2018, you know, it's like we make jokes about the process, 76ers, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
pulling out names like Jarvis Varnado and like Hollis Thompson and these, you know, random Turkish dudes that played for him back then. That's what it felt like with the Phillies. Like, they had some players who were just like, you know, like Freddie Galvis and Cesar Hernandez. And it was just like, those players aren't going to win you games. They're not going to lose you games, but they're not going to win you games either. You know? So just, you felt like you were in purgatory for a little bit until they, you know, again, so they started spending money.
And spend money they have.
Yeah. Yeah. The cigar money, John Middleton's cigar money. You know?
So, is he a cigar guy?
Yeah. It's the family fortune is cigars or whatever. So, you know, money's money though. You know, we're all compromised in some way, I think. So
there's, I swear, like this off season, like, has been so out of this world that there's probably going to be some sort of HBO made for TV movie about this. Yeah. Like, cause we had Ken Singleton on the show a few weeks ago. I'm friends with his son, Dante, and Dante's a big film and TV guy. And so we legit kind of did like a soft casting for an HBO special of this movie. We're going to bounce this off you guys. Here we go. Giovanni Ribisi is Brian Cashman. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is Aaron Boone. Steve Carell is Randy Levine. Michael Imperioli is Mike Francesa.
What? Very good.
Aziz Ansari is Farhan Zaidi, the Giants president.
There you go.
Last but not least, my personal favorite, Jason Bateman is Hal Steinbrenner.
It's pretty good.
Oh, last one, Michael Keaton is Scott Boris.
I was just going to ask who plays Scott Boris. By the way, does it annoy you guys when one of his clients signs a big contract and then they do the introductory press conference and Boris is sitting up there with him at the dais or whatever?
Honestly, I've gotten so used to seeing him there that I kind of stopped noticing.
It doesn't faze you at all. But here, let me ask the question this way.
All right.
Have you ever seen Drew Rosenhaus? Would you ever imagine Drew Rosenhaus sitting up there next to Joe Shane or something?
No, probably not.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, it seems ridiculous when you take that and you, extrapolate or, you know, put it into other sports or whatever. You know, I can't name you a hockey agent, but what if, like, you know, Henrik Lundqvist's agent was sitting there next to him when he did his like introductory press. It's just like, I don't know. I guess we're conditioned to think it's not a big deal because we're just used to Boris always being there. You know, I love when they do the winter meetings too. And Scott Boris has like 40 reporters around him, all like, you know, which client are you going to get paid? I think he had that one year, like 2 years ago, where his clients made like $900 million or something. Like
they've made over $1 billion this year.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well, who was he introducing? Kodai Senge or whatever his name is at Boston. While
Boston, it's Masataka Yoshida.
Oh, Yoshida. Okay. Yeah. So he's just sitting there in Fenway while his other client signs with the Yankees. I know some Red Sox fans were kind of flipping out about that. Like, what are we doing?
He was sitting there for the Trey Turner thing. I'm like, he got like four. We got like three or four questions at the. Oh no, he was sitting there for Taiwan Walker. I'm sorry. Yeah, I mean, but you know, like a number four pitcher too. It wasn't like Bryce Harper. Like if Bryce Harper is going to be signed, I get it. But like,
yeah,
I don't know. It wasn't the largest signing in the world, you know? So,
well, he loves the spotlight, you know.
He does. He
loves to give soundbite too. So
it's as much his achievement as it is his clients.
He's Scott Boris. He's not just an agent. He's probably baseball's biggest showman. Because has anyone here ever seen, Kevin, you probably haven't seen this. Has anyone here besides me watched Michael Kay's old talk show, Center Stage?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So he had Boris on 1 year. I think it was, we'll say sometime between 2004 and 2008. And then he's like, oh, I'm Alex Rodriguez's agent. I've made all these big contracts. Da, da, da. And he actually brought in like, three crate like boxes of files that were apparently all about Alex Rodriguez. I'm like 20 sitting there going, but there's no way there's that many files on Alex Rodriguez. And then you realize just how much bullshit Alex was getting into for non-baseball reasons just during his time at the Yankees. You realize, okay, yeah, there's probably lots of different forms that we don't want to know about that are in those boxes.
I think the thing with Boris though is like, all right, he's an interesting character. He is a character. Everybody knows who he is. Like, I think baseball needs characters in general. You know, I mean, I'll give you two Philly examples. Like, Mike Trout's the best, one of the best players to ever play the game. You know,
sure.
I couldn't tell you what the fuck Mike Trout is doing, because like he doesn't market himself. He plays on the West Coast in a market where nobody watches him. He comes back to Philly to watch the Eagles. You know, he's had a chance to come back here and play if he wanted to, but you need your stars to want to be stars, you know? And it's like, it's funny because there's a baseball bat maker down the street from me in King of Prussia, Pennsylvania, called Victus.
Oh, yeah.
And, we've done a couple things with Victus in the past. Actually, I'll show you at some point here. They made a cool bat for me as a gift. I didn't even ask them for it. It was just a cool thing they made. But they tell me all about the whenever I talk to those guys, they talk about kind of the, it's not a strained relationship. They have a good relationship with Major League Baseball, but they're really, really finicky about the rules, you know? So they make a custom bat for a player and they're allowed to use it during batting practice, but they can't use it during the game. Right. Cause it's got to, you can only use certain colors. You can only use certain palettes and things like that. You know, it's like, and it's been like a point of contention because these guys want to show personality, you know, they want to, you know, have like an image and they want, you know, cool things for kids to latch onto. Right. You know? So it's like Bryce Harper takes the We the People bat and wins the home run derby with it, you know, but you know, he's not allowed to hit a, you know, in a game with that, you know, he can use it in batting practice. Like there's certain rules about what colors they can use. And also, so I don't know. It's just funny to me how, how as popular as the Phillies became again, when they went back to the World Series, imagine if you kept bringing these kids along with it by getting them into the game, by just kind of loosening restrictions a little bit, you know, and just like letting people be themselves and show a little bit of personality. You know, it's like the thing we, you know, complain about the most with that and with hockey or whatever. So you get these like canned quotes and stuff like that. These guys show personality and do some interesting things and use different equipment. You know, I don't know what they're, I don't really know what they're trying to protect at this point, like the sanctity of the game or something like that, I guess. But
yeah, sanctity of the game is the biggest lie they can tell you.
Yeah, no shit.
Yeah.
I mean, like, cause I get it. I mean, like, cause just talking to my stepfather alone about baseball, like I try to explain to him how batting average isn't really a thing anymore. He just doesn't get it. But then when I show him, oh no, like this is hard contact, this is expected batting average. Oh, wow. That's
pretty cool.
That's pretty cool. Awesome.
Yeah.
Looks like a street sign too. It's great.
Yeah, they do the custom knobs and everything too.
Oh, nice.
They did the Love Park for there and the last name.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty sick though. Yeah. The guy who does the custom designs, he's got a really cool story. He was a he did motorcycle art and like automotive for a while. And then they brought him in to do bats. And he's like, yeah, sure. Why not? And he says he loves the canvas just because it's like a continuous kind of thing, like a cylindrical, you know, you think like there's not a lot of surface area to do stuff on here. I realize this is not a visual medium, but you know, you think it's like, hey, like what can I fit on a baseball bat? Not a lot, but you know, you have people who have like, you know, full sleeve tattoos and whatnot where you can fit a lot on there. And it's like,
or just like goalie mass in hockey.
Yeah, exactly. Where there's not a lot of surface area on that either, but people do interesting stuff with it. So yeah, I mean, like I went down to the Victus factory and I was just like, this is cool as shit. Like this makes me like baseball and be like excited for baseball because it's new and it's fresh and it's a little like roguish, you know, it's a little like independent. I think they use like this corporate buzzword now where they use the term disruptor, right? Like they're a disruptor in the market, you know what I mean? I'm like, it sounds stupid, but it makes sense, you know, because they're like, you know, coming in and doing things differently. But yeah, their stuff's pretty cool. I'll have to send you guys the bat king is his nickname. He's like the nicest guy ever though, but he does all this cool artwork. So
Matt, pivoting to some Mets stuff, quick little pivot here. Did you see recently Max Scherzer bought this massive house out on Long Island?
I did see that. Yeah, it was like $5.5 million house or something like that.
Yeah, five or six, I think. And I think in the North Fork too.
Like I think that's where it is. Yeah. Yeah. It makes me feel like he's not gonna opt out next year. But I mean, who knows?
I don't think he's gonna I don't know if he's gonna opt out for next year or not, but if you're gonna buy, because my sister lives out in the North Fork, in not a $5 million house by any stretch of the imagination. If his sister lived in a $5 million house out on the North Fork, we would not be here doing this podcast right now. Anyway, but you got to figure at a minimum, Max Scherzer, for all intents and purposes, he's kind of been a journeyman throughout his career. He was with the Diamondbacks, the Tigers, the Nationals, now the Mets, the Dodgers in between. You got to be thinking, like, he's thinking of retiring and probably sticking around. Maybe he'll get an SNY job. I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. I mean, I can't remember where I heard him. He was on another podcast. I think it may have been Heyman and Sherman's podcast, where he was talking about just his first year in New York and what he liked about it. Said he fell in love with New York and everything that it had to offer and things like that. So, I mean, clearly he liked it enough to put some roots down, at least temporarily speaking. I mean, between what the Mets are paying him and what the Nationals are still paying him, he can afford it very, very easily. So, I mean, it's not like it's kind of a drop in the bucket for him. But, yeah, I mean, he's a pretty insightful dude. I mean, I knew he already was, but then being able to watch him pitch and hear him talk to the media more often and things like that, it's been interesting to see how he perceives things. And you know, you can see real easily how a guy like that ends up being, you know, one of the better pitchers of his generation, too.
He's just where do so the Mets players, where do the Mets and Yankees players and like the New York athletes, do they have like, is there like a hot neighborhood that they all live in, or are they all spread out throughout?
So that's a very good question. So I learned growing up, because I grew up on the Upper West Side of Manhattan on 81st Street. I realized by the time I was around like 8 or 9, oh, lots of the Rangers live in this neighborhood, because like my parents, their parking garage was literally around the corner from their apartment building. We'd go there, we'd see Mike Richter picking up his car, Adam Graves across the street walking his dog, two blocks away, Mark Messier is going for a run. At one point, Brian Leach was renting a unit in our apartment building. But then you go to the Yankee side, currently Garrett Cole lives in Greenwich, as does Aaron Boone, like out in Connecticut. Bernie Williams and Mariano Rivera, I mean, they're retired now, they live in Westchester. Jason Giambi and Jorge Posada's apartment building was on the Upper East Side across from my high school. So it's kind of spread out, if we're being honest. Are most of the Phillies in Jersey?
Yeah, it's interesting. They, sorry, I was Googling something real quick there. I have a quick aside involving the New York Rangers that I want to tell you before we wrap this up. It's funny actually, because, Nick Castellanos bought Ben Simmons' house in Morristown.
Is that right?
Yeah. And Alex laughing because he knows the story, but he was, I mean, the joke, because Castellanos was in a slump and couldn't hit for shit for a long portion of the season, was that like the joke was that like he was cursed because he bought like Ben Simmons. But he came out actually later in the year, perhaps unironically, and he said, like, I just never got settled here, because people knew where Ben Simmons' house was. We had pictures of Ben Simmons' house on Crossing Broad. Yeah. You know, I mean, we didn't like reveal the address. We didn't dox anybody, but the house was on the market.
Yeah.
And there was a, you know, we have a real estate source.
Where was the house again?
It was in Morristown, New Jersey. So fancy part of South Jersey where a lot of the athletes live. Yeah. I mean,
there's a Morristown, North Jersey too.
Yeah. It's Morris, M-O-O-R-E-S. Oh, okay. It's near Delran, where Carly Lloyd is from. And Doug Peterson lived there. Deshaun Jackson lived there. Carson Wentz did not live there. He lived way further south in like Bumble F, New Jersey. But that's another story for another time. But yeah,
my family's from Bumble F, New Jersey. So I get it.
Yeah, but it was funny. Yeah, he came out straight up and he said, like, hey, people know where I live. And, I think that contributed to him just not feeling, he's like a family guy. He's like, you know, he's not a complicated individual, you know, and he was just like, hey, this is kind of weird, that people know, you know. His family too was taking some shtick from Phillies fans, people I hesitate to call Phillies fans, you know, but they live either there or they live, the younger players tend to live in Center City in these fancy high rise places, where they live in an area of Pennsylvania called the Main Line.
Alec, where are you again?
I'm literally like right across the way from the Main Line. So I'm like, I'm familiar with all that.
Yeah. But real quick, it's funny because you mentioned Richter. I know this is a baseball podcast, but the only literally the only hockey writing gig that I've ever done in my entire life was I was asked to do a stringer gig to cover the entire 1996 United States men's World Cup team being inducted into the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. And you, like you mentioned, Richter, and Richter was one of the guys that we talked to. But let me just read the rest of the roster to you real quick here. Right. Brian Leach, Darian Hatcher, Kevin Hatcher, Chris Chelios, Mike Madonna, John LeClaire, Tony Amonte, Bill Guerin, Brett Hull, Pat LaFontaine, Keith Tkachuk, Adam Deadmarsh, wow. Gary Suter, Steve Konowalczuk, Joel Otto. It's just like, I was like looking at these dudes and I'm like, you gotta be like, no wonder they were so damn good. It's like the greatest roster I've ever
I played a lot of NHL when I was in high school, and I would always have Darian Hatcher on my team and get like 1,000 penalty minutes a year.
It was funny because I grew up with my dad watching all these Flyers games, and like we just came to know like the Rangers as assholes, you know. It's like I'm like talking to these dudes, they're like the nicest dudes on the planet, you know.
Well, it's Mike Richter would apply to Flower Town.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, you know, it's funny too, because we had, there were so many good Mets and Phillies stories this year. Like in the very first series that the Mets and the Phillies played, we had the story of the Phillies fan who grabbed the Mets fan's phone and he chucked his phone onto the field.
I remember this.
Remember? Yeah.
Yeah.
So Pagan got a hold of both of those guys, actually, and he put them on his podcast at the same time. And he didn't tell, we actually had an editorial discussion about this, because he's like, hey, I'm gonna get the phone thrower and then I'm gonna get the Mets fan on, but I'm not gonna tell him. And I was like, I don't know, because the Mets fan was like good, and he was like, you know, being fair with us, and he answered some phone calls or whatever. I'm like, don't spring something on him if you don't think he's gonna be comfortable with it. And he's like, no, I think he'll be okay with it. So yeah, we were talking to the Philly phone thrower, and then it's like, oh, we got a surprise for you. It's like Oprah Winfrey or something.
Yeah.
Like, here comes the Mets scumbag fan is on the thing now. But it was hilarious, you know. But it just it's weird too, because like Matt probably knows this, but like the Phillies and the Mets don't play until May. Mm. You know, which is weird, because I know they're doing the because the schedule is a little different this year, but it just feels strange that there's so much hype for both teams going into this year, and it's like gotta wait 2 months before they even play their first series, you know.
It's because like similarly, I don't think the Yankees play the Red Sox until July next year. Yeah.
What?
Yeah, but at the same time, like people are like crying about the loss of divisional play, but now that there's universal DH, that doesn't make sense anymore. All teams are going to play each other. It's going to be fun and better for the game. No. The Phillies come to Yankee Stadium before the Red Sox come to Yankee Stadium this year.
Yeah, I would rather just, I don't know if this is popular or not, but I would rather just the Northeast teams be in their own cluster, you know, and whatever with the AL and the NL. I know they got it divided up somehow, but I would love to have a division where it was Sox, Mets, Yankees, Phillies, you know. I don't care about the Marlins. What do I care about the Marlins, you know? So... I know it's probably not realistic, because then you'd have a division with like, I don't know, the Marlins and the Rays and, you know, Atlanta or something. Would anybody care about that? I guess not. But I don't know. It's just, I wish the Phillies played the Yankees more. I wish they played the Red Sox more. Yeah. Just marquee teams. But you want to play games against the best teams that there are. So.
And who cares about the Marlins? Seriously. It's the Marlins.
Yeah, I know. And the Phillies always struggle with them too for some reason.
Oh, dude, like in the COVID season, the Yankees had such a hard, they like barely got past the Marlins.
Yeah.
It was infuriating.
Yeah. Yeah. They would just like, they would take like two or three from the Mets, and then they'd take like two or three from, you know, they'd go out to like the Dodgers and they'd take like three or four from them. And then they come home and they'd lose two in a row to the Mets or something. It was like clockwork. You know, you probably could have made yourself a millionaire if you're gambling off that pattern, you know. But
if you want to make some easy money, maybe this has already happened, bet money on Alec getting not only getting a Trey Turner shirt. I'm going to call him out even further, dude. At some point next season, you're going to cut your hair and shave the beard so you look like Trey Turner.
No the beard,
bullshit.
Beard and hair stays, man. The jersey for sure is happening. I can't decide if I want to go with the powder blue, or I don't know if this is an unpopular opinion amongst Phillies fans, but I really dig the maroon jerseys.
Mm.
So I'm thinking either
the pinstripe maroon.
Yeah, I think that's the one I'm thinking of. They, I think yeah, they had that, like, that the pinstripe one and then a solid one.
Well, the pinstripe maroon is the one from like the '80s.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's
the one. Well, the Phillies wore powder blue, I think, in the one game in the World Series and
got no
that
hit.
Was like their that was like, yeah, exactly. That was their that was like their primary when they played the Astros, I think, in like the 1980 NLCS, I want to say. And those Houston jerseys were badass back then too. You know,
like the rainbow jerseys, the
multicolor. Yeah, you know, yeah. But I mean, it's just everything's just too dull in MLB these days. I think that goes like hand in hand with what I was saying about Victus. You know, like it just feels like you can modernize a lot of these things without like losing anything. I don't know. I look at the NBA and like the way that the NBA is really caught on with a younger generation. It's like hip and it's like in or whatever. And I used to go to these games as a credentialed Sixers reporter and like, the media and like the TV people would be wearing like Jordans or whatever, you know, but it was like cool. It wasn't seen as like irreverent or whatever. I don't know. Like you were just like allowed to have personality. I don't know. I think MLB is just missing a little bit of personality, you know?
Well, and like hockey is kind of getting a little bit better with that. I don't watch a lot of NBA, but like, especially with hockey, you know, they do the posts, the pregame, the players walking in with their different, you know, suits and outfits on.
Yeah.
That in of itself is like a cool personality highlight for the individual player. The NHL is trying to do it with like more alternate jerseys and stuff like that. So, but the issue is like sometimes with the NHL, I feel like baseball would struggle with this is like, there's too many hits and misses with it. Like you're going to get like in one organization, do a really good job with it. And then five organizations just completely shit the bed. And it's just like, oh, you guys didn't really change anything and you played it safe. And, you know, baseball struggling a little bit to get into that more modern, exciting era, because anytime we have a really exciting player like Harper or Acuna and what have you, like, people want to shit on them and be like, you know, they're toxic. They're bad for the game.
I haven't heard too many people shitting on Acuna though.
Oh, I'm pretty sure there's been a lot of people shitting on Acuna, but yeah.
Well, this version, this would have been a better example a couple of years ago. Not this version of Fernando Tatis Jr. But I remember, you know, he came out like 2 years ago and basically just poo-pooed all over the unwritten rules of the game.
Oh yeah. You know?
And I can't remember exactly what the situation was. I think
it's like a 3-0 pitch grand slam.
Is that what it was?
Yeah. I think it's during the COVID season. I think if I'm thinking of the thing that you're
saying. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
I remember seeing his reaction to that and writing a column off of it. And I was just like, you know what? Like, I get it. This dude's like different. He wants to do his own thing. He's going to kind of go against the grain. And like, I don't know. It seemed like refreshing, I guess, because just seem to be like, you know, deviating from the typical path at that point, you know.
It's kind of a shame because you have guys like Tatis Jr., guys like Tim Anderson who kind of add their own sort of swagger and flair to the game, and then guys look for reasons like you said to shit all over them. And then all of a sudden, oh, Tatis turns out he's kind of like a spoiled brat. Tim Anderson, he's married, but he's got two very public side pieces and has kids with one of them. It's like never meet your heroes, but they just kind of hope that what every once in a while, like once every 5 or so years, you're gonna have that Harper, that Machado, who just has that flashy style and it just lands.
Yeah. I think the other great thing about it too, and like we kind of rediscovered this during the playoff run, was that baseball for a site like ours at least just creates more moments than any other sport, more little quirky, viral, easy, short post moments. You know, I mean, I remember after one game, it was the Rhys Hoskins bat spike where he hit the home run and threw the bat down. There's this lady in the front row who was just looking at her phone the entire time. We took a picture, we took a screenshot of the TV. I think I literally held my phone up to the TV and took a picture of it and circled her in like yellow or whatever. And it was like, what the hell is this lady? It's like one of the greatest playoff moments of all time in Philly's history. And she's just staring at her phone. We were having like all kinds of fun, you know, irreverent jokes about it. You know, she's probably like actually we found out that her husband is like a rich doctor in New Jersey or something. And she was probably just along for the ride, you know?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So we gave her the nickname of Botox wife, which may be rude, but I don't know. We kept calling her uninterested Botox wife for the rest of the series, but you just like, it was just like, you know, like chock full of that kind of stuff. I mean, it was like, you know, it's just the pace of the game and like the different people you look at and stuff. It's like perfect. It was perfect for the stuff we were doing, you know?
Yeah. Hopefully, I mean,
we can do it again.
Yeah. I mean, God, you just reminded me, I was in the stands at Yankee Stadium for when Judge hit number 60.
Yeah.
And it's the ninth inning. The Yankees are trying to mount a comeback against the goddamn Pirates of all teams. And sure enough, he hits this home run, which in the grand scheme of the game was meaningless. The Yankees came one run closer after being down like five or whatever. And then sure enough, everyone else is glued to watching history. And then sure enough, there's two rows in front of us. People are just chit-chatting away about nothing and not even paying attention.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, not even realizing what's happening. It just, yeah. We did a lot of stuff a couple years ago when they changed the rules and they brought the netting up.
Yeah.
You know, because I think it was after the woman was hit by the foul ball and was injured pretty badly, you know. Mm-hmm. You had this very interesting kind of, I don't know if you guys saw this up there, but in Philly, like a lot of we got these responses to our stories like, well, you know, if these people would just pay attention during the game, and I, you know, sitting there thinking like, well, I mean, yeah, even the people who are like paying attention to the most, like you're not staring at the pitcher or the plate the entire game. I mean, like you look around, you look off to the side, you're talking to your friend, you're doing whatever, you know, like, plus not, if somebody crashed, so like,
you're asking someone to have perfect reaction time to a ball that could be coming at them at upwards of 110 miles per hour.
Even if you're paying attention and you're like, you were a high school athlete or something, you may not be able to get out of the way or something, you know. But that was just interesting to watch, like the pushback against what to me seemed like a pretty simple safety measure, but what do I know, you know? So I think it's interesting though. I don't know if you have a take on this, Josh, but like baseball just does so well in the Northeast, you know, and then you go to other markets and it's like people couldn't be bothered, you know, but Philly, New York, Boston, like the big Northeastern markets,
I think honestly it's because baseball is still such a localized sport, and how like the heartbeat of, especially with the Yankees and the Mets, the heartbeat of the Dodgers and the Giants still beats in the city 100%. And then like, maybe it's recency bias, but like the Mets, they're like, we're not that far removed from the Subway Series or the bad guys in 1986. On the Yankees end, like the heart, like the pulse of Mantle, Ruth, Gehrig, like that whole old guard is still here.
Yeah.
I never watched him play a single day in my life. I can say my favorite Yankee of all time is probably Yogi Berra, just because of all the stories he has attached to him. And like I say to people all the time, baseball moves the slowest. It has the best stories.
Yeah.
Like
look across all sports. Like you're not going to find any sport with funnier stories than in baseball.
No, and it's funny too. I don't know. I imagine it was probably the same in New York. You guys would know. But, you know, a couple years ago, you know, everybody would do these. Every time you turn on the radio, they'd have these like kind of dramatic discussions about like, is baseball dying or is the sport like falling apart? You know, it's like, They would cite these like national ratings, you know, like Sunday Night Baseball or whatever. And like, okay, so maybe like the dude who lives in Atlanta isn't tuning in to watch the Sox and the Yankees on Sunday night the same right. time, the same way that he would watch like the Packers versus the Bucks on Monday Night Football or something, right? But what we found in Philly was that like the local ratings were still massive, you know? So just because Philly's fans weren't watching like Dodgers Mets on Sunday Night Baseball didn't mean that they weren't tuning into the Phils. So I imagine that was probably the same for you guys, right?
Yeah, I mean it's strange because like I'll watch like most national baseball games. Oh my god, my kid just woke up. Oh well, but anyway. So, but the point being, yeah, like numbers are going down because first off, no one in the industry could have accounted for so many people in the last 10 years cutting cable, right?
Mm-hmm.
But even still, like, there's that fandom where you know, okay, there's that pitcher on the team I want to watch. Like, oh, Max Scherzer's pitching on Sunday night. I want to watch him pitch. And then, Bryce Harper, I want to watch him play. It's strange because it's not that baseball's dipping in popularity. It's that all the revenue sharing and stuff, it's created this unique sense of parity so that at the start of the season, yeah, like, it could be anybody's game. And now with expanded playoffs, you're going to see even more smaller market teams compete. And hopefully it leads to a rise in popularity because when the small market teams do well, the sport as a whole is going to do well. It's like baseball diversity.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, It was interesting. Matt can speak to this, but we, you know, I guess last week we got together with James and looked at ESNY site traffic for, you know, going back to like April or whatever, since we started like reworking the site. Right. And we just kind of calculate, we went through like the top, I don't know what, like 50 or 75 stories or something like that. And we just, you know, logged, you know, cause we were looking for patterns, like, hey, what's working, what's not working, you know, what should we focus on? What should we not focus on? And we wrote it all out. Matt was the stenographer for this exercise. And what would you say, like upwards of probably like 70-75% of like the best stuff on the site was all baseball stuff?
Yeah, I was gonna say probably about 75%.
Yeah,
I guess too. Yeah,
yeah. But it was just, I mean, it was all landing. The Mets stuff was landing, the Yankees stuff was landing, Hot Stove, Aaron Judge. I mean, it was like fascinating to me because again, I'm a Philly guy, you know, and you know, as crappy as the Phillies were over the last 10 years, to think that baseball would lead any website down here would be like crazy to think, you know. But then the World Series came around, I saw the site traffic for Crossing Broad, and you know, then I see what's working with ESNY right now. It's like all of these discussions are like, I don't know. They just seem not rooted in anything. They seem like lazy, I don't know, sports talk radio discussions. Like, is baseball too slow? You know, I'm like, well, the ratings still show there's a shit ton of people watching it. So,
I mean, they may, like, what's the yearly revenue at? It's, I feel like it's always around like $10 billion. And then they had that, what was that? That sale of BAM Tech or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Each team got $30 million off of that. Every single team got $30 million. So it's like, there's still plenty of money. And they're talking about how, like, well, like they're paying these guys way too much. It's like, well, everyone has this money that's essentially burning in their pocket. It's just a matter of who's actually going to spend it or not. Yeah. There are teams like the A's and the Pirates, and at least for right now, the Orioles, who are not spending it.
Mm.
And then there's a really small portion who are. So, I mean, it's, you know, people want like the some kind of a salary cap or this or that or whatever it may be. Everyone thinks that there's something wrong with baseball. Baseball has a lot of work to do, especially with like marketing and stars. And like going back to the conversation about like the culture and the outfits and things like that. Like, I think part of the thing that's the problem with baseball for that is that it's an everyday thing. So it's like, what, at least like for football, it's like, okay, once a week you go see what they're wearing as they're walking into the locker room.
Yeah.
It's like, you really want to see what Bryce Harper is wearing on like a Wednesday night when he's about to go play the Marlins. But like during the playoffs,
yeah,
like they showed like some of his outfits and like the chains that he had and stuff. People ate that stuff up. So it's like, they need to like be able to thread that needle a little bit to be able to, you know, attract that younger audience without having to beat us over the head with it every single day.
Yeah. I mean, Alec probably remembers like when Bryce Harper first signed here, like he would, you know, show up with like a gritty shirt or he'd have like Philly Fanatic socks or something like that.
Yeah. I'm like, I remember when he like broke out for the first time, the Philly Fanatic headband.
Yeah.
And at the time I was a coach and I was working with kids, and next thing you know, every single kid is wearing it.
Yeah.
And it's like such a great thing. And, you know, you can ask any kid between the age of like 8 and 15, like, who's your favorite player on the Phillies? Your two options are going to be either Harper or like really JT. And so it's a good thing to have those icons that new fans can center in on, old fans can get behind. But like, yeah, MLB, it has a tendency of wanting to snuff that out. It drives me insane. It's like the only sport where it's actively trying to reduce offense just because it's the nature of the game, right? You know, hitting is always going to be reactionary to the trends of pitching. But yeah, even for like the stars, with guys who can really take center stage on the national broadcast, like, you know, Aaron Judge is iconic because of his size and stuff like that. But then you got Bryce Harper, who's iconic for his personality. And then you got Mike Trout, who's not doing anything on the West Coast. There is an issue of like who to market and how to market them correctly, because, you know, out of the four big sports, you know, you got to say NBA is head and shoulders above everyone. And, you know, MLB is treading water slightly above the NHL. And, you know, they got to find a way to keep making the excitement, you know, build.
The Yankees are sincerely lacking in this department, because if you look at their Instagram page, and they'll show guys showing up to the stadium. Everyone's dressed the same way. It's always like sweater and jeans, like t-shirt and jeans. Like no one's there's nothing there. It's like it's
no beard rule. You got to get rid of
no
the
shit. All right, get the no beard rule guy. Does Philly feel the same way that the Yankees no beard rule is so dumb?
I've always felt that it's very dumb. You don't really hear a lot about that down here, though. I'm not sure why.
I say this to someone who literally cannot grow a beard. I wish the Yankees had beards.
I just would never. I think fundamentally it's like, right, like who gives a shit what you look like? You know, if I was a free agent, I would never play there because I'd be like, why do you care what I look like? You're not signing me because of the way I look. Yeah, especially as far as we've come in like 2022 with like body image and stuff like that.
Seriously.
It's like it's crazy to me.
Like you got Gleyber Torres having neck tattoos and stuff, and like that, and then you know, Aroldis Chapman with all his tattoos. It's like there's nothing wrong with that. Why can't you wear a fucking beard?
Gleyber looks good with a beard too. Especially,
he's been
playing a winter ball down in Venezuela.
You want to make a surefire bet is whenever a guy leaves the Yankees, what's the over under in days when he shows up with facial hair?
Exactly.
It's like when I worked in television and the news anchors went on vacation, they would just immediately stop shaving, you know, and they'd come back like a whatever. But I've always found it very dumb because to me, I don't know, maybe you know better than I do, Josh, but it always seemed like the explanation for why they have it is just because we've always done it. Right.
Steinbrenner did it as a means of imposing discipline and like this winning culture. It's stupid.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing. There is literally no tangible effect that it has on anybody. So why should it?
It's the Yankee way.
The other thing that bothers me, just like to wrap up that last thing I was talking about.
Yeah. We got to wrap up the show too in a second. Oh, sure. We're coming up on the hour.
I'll make it quick. You always read these articles about like, well, World Series ratings were down, you know, the third lowest or the fourth lowest or the second lowest. You can't compare the World Series ratings of now to when 40 million people watched the World Series, you know.
Yeah.
it's not that era anymore. Baseball is still like number two right there with the NBA in terms of championship viewing, you know.
Yeah.
So it's like the Super Bowl, then usually the World Series and the NBA championship are right there.
World Series and NBA finals usually trade off year after year depending on who's in the NBA finals.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of fake news that's written in there because people aren't really telling the full story, you know. It's like you can't yes the Phillies and the Royals in 1980 did like 45 million people or whatever, but it's just not nice. It's not 1980 anymore, you know.
No. So, especially like I said, less people have cable now.
Yeah.
All right, well, this was a fun conversation, a good last episode of 2022 for the Bleacher Creatures podcast. We're hopefully going to have some more guests on in the meantime. Kevin, Matt, thanks for coming on. It was great having you guys here. Where can they find you on social media? And plug anything you want to plug right now.
Thanks for having me on. It was fun. You can find me on Twitter at mmusico8. And I talk a lot about the Mets at elitesportsnewyork.com.
Yeah, it's Kevin_Kincaid if you want to hear about just random Philly topics and the local soccer team. There you go.
Real last quick Philly thing. Pats or Geno's?
Neither.
See? You know, D'Alessandro's is overrated, but
I don't have a cheesesteak place. People can go to whatever cheesesteak place they want to.
I don't even like cheesesteaks that much.
Geno's and Pats are just seen as like the tourist places. That's all.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. All right, folks. Well, have a Merry Christmas. Merry Christmaka, Kwanzaa, Festivus, everything in between. See you guys next year.